Yet it does not account for the fact that poltergeist cases in other countries, and they have been recorded all over the world for centuries, do not as a rule show signs of the same linkage. In the case with which I am most familiar, which took place in the North London suburb of Enfield in 1977-78, my colleague Morris Gross and I never came across any indication that anybody, living or dead, had any motive for making the lives of the family affected a bewildering misery, although many of the phenomena we observed and recorded at Enfield were much the same as those I had come across in Brazil. Why this should be is a question best left to anthropologists, and it is not one I can answer here. Too, indeed, there is little we can say about poltergeists except that the effects attributed to them are real. I did not hallucinate that shower of stones at Carapicuíba, or the loud bangs I recorded at Ipiranga, or the heavy armchair at Enfield that slid along the floor and flipped over backwards in front of my eyes. These things do happen, and pretending they don't merely postpones investigation. Not only do they happen, but they represent a challenge by providing clear evidence that there is more to physical reality than is dreamed of by most professors of physics, with one or two honorable exceptions, and they remind us that there is still plenty we do not know about the world, or worlds, we live in. Researching this extended reality is not easy, as Macbeth found when he was trying to get some hard evidence for that unknown power out of those prophetic witches, as I mentioned in my introduction. On the whole though, I think I can claim that I was a good deal more fortunate than he was. I may never have seen a flying cow, but I saw quite enough of unknown powers in action to know that exist. And that, for me, is reason enough to seek to know more. Postscript, in memoriam, 2011. In 1974, when I began to write the original edition of this book, I hoped I was making a modest contribution to the history of psychical research by recording the achievements of the IBPP, the small group of enthusiastic and unfunded amateurs headed by Hernani Guimarães Andrade who, in little more than a decade, had laid the foundations for what he intended to be a permanent institute that was to do for Brazil what the Society for Psychical Research had done for Britain, establish psychical research as a valid and strictly scientific field of inquiry. Yet it was not to be. Whereas the SPR has survived and is still going strong 130 years after its foundation, the IBPP was wound up in 1982 after less than 20 years of existence, and 30 years later there was no sign of any successor. So I find myself unwillingly writing an epitaph for that small band of explorers who showed how much evidence for the anomalous side of human experience there is to be found if anyone takes the trouble to look for it. Was it worth it? Speaking for myself, very much so. Despite worldwide interest in such mysterious subjects as poltergeists, mediumship, psychic surgery and reincarnation, relatively little effort has been made outside a handful of countries to collect first-hand evidence for them and preserve that evidence for posterity. It has been done most successfully in Britain, Germany, France, Italy and the USA, yet in many parts of the world such work has barely begun. Brazilians may be surprised to know that the IBPP archive, modest as it may be when compared to that of the SPR, was able in a relatively short time to become one of the half dozen or so largest in the world. I am very pleased to have been able to contribute to it. 1. It would be unfair to claim that psi research in Brazil ground to a permanent halt in 1982. The fact that the Parapsychological Association chose to hold its 2011 convention in the southern Brazilian city of Curitiba is a sign that Brazil is well established as a member of this international community. The PAR has members from 36 countries, the Brazilian contingent being the sixth largest after those of the five countries mentioned above. At the 2010 convention, Brazilian delegates gave talks on Kardkin, the development of spiritism, and on the neuroimagery of the mediumistic trance, one of the speakers being Dr. Julio Perez, whose parents Ney and Maria Julia were founder members of the IBPP. There has also been some progress in the study of psychic surgeons, of which Brazil has produced several more in addition to those I have described. The best known of these were Edson Queiroz, who was somewhat unusual in that he was a fully qualified doctor, whose highly unorthodox surgical techniques were observed and well described by anthropologist Sidney M. Greenfield of the University of Wisconsin, who managed to follow up some of the operations he witnessed, and João Teix Rida Faria, better known as João de Deus, John of God, whose career has been documented by Australian visitor Robert Pellegrino Estrich. 2.3. Among the few Brazilians who have managed to witness psychic surgery and report on it in detail are São Paulo psychologist Margarida de Carvalho and a team headed by psychiatrist Alexander Moura Almeida of the University of Juiz de Fora, which included veteran American parapsychologist Stanley Krippner. The authors make it fairly clear that they are only scratching the surface of the wealth of medical mystery yet to be uncovered in the world of the Brazilian psychic surgeon. 4.5. An impressive public demonstration of psychic surgery was given by Edison Queiroz at the CYTAG conference in Bâle, Switzerland, in 1986 when he performed three operations in a well-lit hall in front of several hundred spectators. All of them involved cutting of the skin with what looked like an ordinary surgical scalpel, with no kind of anesthesia or sterilization, less bleeding than one would expect, and all three patients clearly remaining fully conscious throughout. 5 weeks later, the doctor who had supplied the patients testified that there had been no complications or side effects. It was too soon to claim permanent cures, yet in the case of the man who had had a lipoma removed from his arm, it was quite clear that it wasn't there any longer. There could be no question, at least on this occasion, of any of the sleight-of-hand tricks allegedly, and in some cases undeniably, performed by less reputable surgeons. To ascribe all psychic surgery to trickery, as some die-hard skeptics continue to do, is an allegation that is becoming increasingly hard to support, especially in view of the abundance of video-recorded evidence such as that of Sidney Greenfield, with its close-ups of knives slicing through an anaesthetized skin and even an electric saw cutting through bones. 6. In this book I have concentrated on the field work, yet I should not give the impression that the IBPP neglected the theoretical side of the coin. Hernani's extensive writings on his theories of spirit and matter and how they interact, and his laboratory experiments deserve a book to themselves, by somebody better qualified for the task than I am. To give some idea of Hernani's views of the nature of the composition and workings of the psi world, I would like him to have the last word here, hoping that my translation does it justice. It is adapted from his first book, The Corpuscular Theory of the Spirit, 1958, published 5 years before the formation of the IBPP, in which he argued convincingly that if there were such a thing as a psi or spirit world, as his extensive field research was to suggest, it must have some kind of structure and it must obey laws just as our familiar physical world does. He also put forward the idea that living beings are influenced by the past history of their species, an idea similar in many respects to that of formative causation proposed entirely independently some 20 years later by Rupert Sheldrake. 7. Appendix, PSI Matter, Hernani Gomeriz Andrade. It has often been observed that the phenomenon of life seems to disobey the second law of thermodynamics, which states that energy may only be transferred in one direction, from hot to cold or from an upper to a lower level, and that our physical universe shows a constant tendency towards entropy or disorganization. It is in effect running down like a clock of which the key has been lost. This law was, of course, never intended to apply to open systems or living matter, and is mentioned here only for purposes of analogy. This universe of ours seems to have begun as a huge agglomeration of particles in a state of intense movement, containing zones of considerable energetic imbalance. Some of these still exist today, for some parts of the universe are much hotter than others. Physical matter has transformed itself by natural laws into ever more stable structures, as it has come into contact with lower temperatures and caused all of our various chemical compounds to come into existence, always by a process of energetic degradation. When we come across organic molecule formations that show a high degree of energy accumulation, we have to assume that there must be an energy source capable of forming them, such as ultraviolet rays or a state of high temperature or pressure. Yet, in the face of this state of steadily advancing chaos, with all forms of energy doomed to disperse in a downward direction, we have the fact of life. This behaves in just the opposite manner, like a swimmer making good progress against a strong current. Rather than tending towards total entropy, life heads resolutely in the other direction, towards coherence, harmony and evolution. Life is negative entropy indeed. Purely materialistic attempts to explain the origin of life collapse before the inexorable principle of increasing entropy. Materialists have to face the fact that there is a highly intelligent organizing principle at work in the protoplasm of living beings, which they cannot reasonably explain as being due to chance, or to the dialectical evolution of matter. In an influential textbook, The Origin of Life, A.I. Oparin has suggested that the life principle is merely the product of natural selection at molecular level in the formation of colloidal aggregates, or coservates. But if this were true, an extremely fortunate form of chance would have to intervene, leading towards an organization able to replicate itself indefinitely, until told to stop, and set up a harmonious interdependence among its component parts. To ascribe the phenomenon of life to chance plus natural selection seems as unreasonable as to ascribe it to the mysterious properties of solar energy. Both these factors undoubtedly play an important part, but neither provides a full explanation. The phenomenon of life has been with us for rather less than half the period of time that has elapsed since our Earth took its present shape. How life appeared, organized itself, and overcame all the many obstacles found in its path towards evolution in such a short time, is very hard to explain along purely materialistic lines, especially in our century when serious doubts have arisen as to exactly what matter is in the first place. It is not so much the high energy constitution and the astonishing asymmetry to be found in living matter that surprises us, as the perfection of organization that we can see in it, in which the aim of every separate function can immediately be identified. Living matter has an amazing ability to make use of every resource, every natural law, and every quality of substance, in order to carry out what appears to be a gigantic master plan, of which we are only able to perceive a few isolated details. Everything in the behavior of living matter suggests the manifestation of something that seeks and thinks, in fact something that behaves intelligently, which in organic matter does not. Life creates order out of chaos, and there is no satisfactory materialistic explanation as to why this should be so. This fact becomes much less mysterious, however, if we admit the possible existence of an actual non-material component, the psi component, that guides living molecules along their predestined path. Most biological phenomena take place thanks to the specific properties of protoplasm, which literally means the first mold, the substance fundamental to all organized living beings. This is the level at which we find the three basic characteristics of living matter in operation: vitality, perception and intelligence. At this level, we also find these three factors associating themselves into a permanent state of coexistence. How can we ascribe to physical matter the faculty of suddenly embarking upon a movement towards increasing organization, in defiance of the second law of thermodynamics, only after reaching an advanced stage of molecular complexity? We know that proteins and nucleic acids form themselves according to natural laws and events. But what known law or event can explain the behavior of these substances at the point where they reveal rudiments of intelligence, social collectivism, and discernment between what is useful for their growth and what is not? We can provide a chemical explanation for the way a large organic molecule assimilates a substance that helps it to self-reproduce, and eventually to produce a whole colony of molecules. But the enigma remains: how do these molecules reach a state of association, after a certain number of attempts, that human social organizations are often unable to achieve even after considerable planning, experiment and thought? We will make no progress towards an understanding of life unless we admit that an extra-material principle takes part in the process of forming living substance, a principle endowed with the same faculties that are reflected in the conduct of adult human beings. It is not being suggested that this principle intervenes ostensibly in the operation of the natural laws that govern physical matter, or that it replaces or contradicts such laws. It makes use of them, imposing an orientation and a determinism of its own, under which the laws of chance give way to the action of an intelligent will. This principle, the psi factor, manifests itself as a source of order out of chaos, a plan of action with well-defined aims. We can go even further and suppose, without disappearing altogether into a cloud of metaphysical speculation, that the whole history of life on Earth is only part of a long-term plan drawn up with a specific objective in view. What this objective may be, and who or what has it in view, are speculations better left for the time being to philosophers, theologians and mystics. Two important features of living matter are the large size of its component molecules, and the constant presence in its composition of a high proportion of such low-weight elements as hydrogen, carbon, oxygen and nitrogen. The molecule is a homogeneous whole, within which the different energetic levels of its component atoms combine harmoniously, by the process known in chemistry as valence. The molecule is formed by what may seem to be blind natural forces, but once formed it adopts a distinctly intelligent course. As it moves around in its protoplasmic jelly, looking for the chemicals it needs in order to grow, it is already behaving, in embryonic form, much in the same way its end product will behave. Every reaction of its infinitesimal intelligence is a forerunner of the structural behavior of the future organized and completed being. The autocatalysis of molecular substance is the first instance of the domination of matter by a living will, the start of a process that is to culminate in the desire to reproduce the species through the act of sexual love. To explain the phenomenon of interaction between matter and the psi function or component, we must take some liberties with traditional concepts of physics, even those of modern physics with all its ambiguities and uncertainties. To summarize briefly, the psi atom, the fundamental constituent of psi matter, consists of three principal particles, the bion, intellecton and perceptron. These are, respectively, negatively, positively and neutrally charged, as are the electron, proton and neutron of physical matter. Each contains a quantum, respectively, of vitality, intelligence and perception memory. The natural habitat of psi matter is a hyperspace of at least five dimensions, four of space and one of time. Psi matter interacts with physical matter on our plane by means of fields, the electromagnetic properties of physical matter and the biomagnetic fields of psi matter. Psi matter is molecular in structure. Just as material atoms have affinities among themselves, enabling them to unite and form molecules, so do simple psi atoms have the ability to originate combinations, or psi molecules. These are organized in a manner analogous to that of physical molecules, and from such organizations emerge the bodies of the psi world, including the biological organizing models. These originate in the biological process through the interaction of psi molecules with the organic molecules that enter into the composition of living tissue. A biological organizing model, BOM, is formed by a succession of reincarnatory stages in a continuous process of evolution, or enlargement of its hyperform. A biological being is the result of a harmonious conjugation of physical and psi factors, the former contributing the phenomena of autocatalysis, chemical selection and combination, enzymatic action, electrical and other processes governed by physical laws. The latter registers and preserves biological experience in its space-time structure, impressing its individuality on the living being and helping it to evolve by means of a rapid recapitulation of its entire experience. Psi matter interacts with physical matter by a process of field attraction. Under the influence of a sufficiently intense field, the trajectory of the bions of the psi atom undergoes an alteration, which leads to a partial loss of the four-dimensional form of the bionic layers. In this way, the psi atom acquires a form that is intermediary between three and four dimensions. In the same way, its properties are altered, to assume the qualities of both the psi and the physical atom. This partial loss of one dimension causes the appearance of a field generated by the spins and orbits of the bion. This is the biomagnetic field, or BMF mentioned above. Once operating in our three-dimensional space, the psi atom behaves much like a physical one, except that it is never wholly in three dimensions. Its spines and nuclei are only partially deformed, and the field originating from the spins of its pions will vary in proportion to the extent of this partial deformation. The mutual influence between electro and biomagnetic fields in the neighborhood of physical matter will lead to constant deformations in the bionic layers of psi atoms, leading to their frequent magnetic polarization. The greater or lesser number of pions in the layers around psi elements will determine their greater or lesser susceptibility to magnetic polarization. Both pion and electron are energetic charges that can originate a magnetic field. Both are also susceptible to alterations in their kinetic state whenever they are in the presence of a variable magnetic field. In such a situation, an electron will immediately change its orbit and start to move in a direction almost perpendicular to that of the field which has disturbed it. Just as a physical atom sets up a magnetic field of its own when it is submitted to the action of a magnetic field, so does a psi atom, when it is close to physical matter. Its pions suffer the influence of the three-dimensional field, altering their orbits accordingly in order to become partially operative in three-dimensional space. When a psi atom becomes thus polarized, a biomagnetic field is set up, and the psi atom becomes operative as an intermediary between psi and physical matter, enabling the formation of bodies that show properties common to either type of matter. This is not to suggest that full interaction of physical and psi worlds is always possible. The most likely plug-in stage is that of the living molecule, which is a very large object compared to a single atom. This is the point of departure for the process of individual organic growth, so it seems the logical stage for the plugging in of the psi factor. The term plug-in is used deliberately. The psi factor does not interpenetrate physical matter, strictly speaking. It merely exercises an influence over it by means of the interaction of the respective fields. Such interaction is not always total. Plug and socket must fit each other, as in the case of household appliances. Let us examine four possible situations. First, we have the case where a physical molecule is much smaller than a psi atom, and gives off a low-intensity magnetic field. In this case, the molecule will exercise a barely perceptible influence on the psi element, and the physical substance involved can hardly be said to be animated. Molecules of low atomic weight come into this category, such as those of hydrogen and oxygen. Nevertheless, the weak action of the field set up by these molecules will serve to attract a certain number of psi atoms, to form a kind of layer of psi matter superimposed on the physical space occupied by the object in question. This layer is what is known as an aura, possessed by inanimate as well as animate objects. In the second case, we have molecules of small volume but with a more intense field, such as those of mineral salts, copper, lead, and other minerals of high atomic weight. These molecules, though small in volume, are made up of heavy atoms, and so have larger molecular weight, so the concentration of material mass in a small space will set up a stronger magnetic field. As in the first case above, polarization of psi atoms by such molecules as these is imperfect and unstable, and consequently there is again no animation. In the third case, we have molecules that are larger than the psi atom they attract. Here, there will be considerable action on the part of the molecule over the psi atom, but the latter will not be able to respond with equal intensity. Molecules such as those of hemoglobin and hemocyanin probably come under this category. They can be said to be animated up to a point, but their psi component is too small to exercise any detectable influence over them. Finally, we have the case of a molecule and a psi atom of practically the same volume. Here we will have maximum interaction between the fields attached to each, with the psi component exercising its full influence on the molecule of physical matter, giving rise to an animated being of full autonomy and stability, a biomolecule, the basic unit of biological growth and the building block of living creatures. As soon as the biomolecule comes into existence, it is guided along its evolutionary path by its psi component, the BOM, which carries in its perceptons a miniaturized memory record of all previous processes of growth and association. The BOM directs the biomolecular interchains of nucleic acids and proteins, in an elementary lesson in social organization, with the DNA chain carrying the purely physical characteristics of its ancestors, condensed in the genes, along a sort of transpatial cable of information. The self-reproduction of the DNA chain and the synthesis of proteins through various catalysts lead to the first experience of cell division and multiplication. Next, the information contained in the particles of the psi atom causes embryonic organisms to develop cells that will eventually grow into organs needed to carry out the essential functions of the living species concerned. This process takes place over and over again, with physical matter always obeying the same immutable laws, but with the psi factor constantly evolving, as it acquires new experience in its successive associations with physical matter. The history of evolution is the history of the progress of the psi factor. Physical matter does not evolve at all. What evolves is the psi matter that interacts with it and guides it. All forms of inorganic matter, and some rudimentary forms of organic matter, are much the same today as they always have been. Higher species of living beings, including Homo sapiens, are not. The original biomolecules must have been formed at points along the chains of polypeptides that floated around on the waters, colliding with each other to form occasional spirals or skeins. As their joint material mass increased, they were able to attract and hold more and more complex psi elements through their biomagnetic fields, until the time came when a group of psi elements large enough to survive the process known as physical death was evolved. As millions and millions of rudimentary living beings were formed and destroyed on the stage of earthly life, long before recorded history, the psi elements gradually grew into compound formations that were finally able to animate what we would now recognize as a plant, an animal, or, much later, a human being. Natural selection and the fight for survival undoubtedly guided all early forms of life, as they still do to some extent, enabling the psi component to guide them through the early stages of evolution. We have literally had to learn and remember everything from scratch. Prehistoric biological organizations must have originated from combinations of proteins and nucleic acids, thereby forming nucleoproteins similar to our modern bacteriophages and viruses. Later, these learned to form themselves into associations, governed by the laws regarding colloids and coccovates, until they reached the stage of plasmatic organization of living matter. Much has been achieved in the history of biological evolution, though there is still much more to be achieved. The time will come when psi matter no longer has any need for association with physical matter in order to evolve, and the human race will be transformed, like chrysalis into butterfly, into something else. Perhaps some human races have already undergone such a process. Faced with any stimulus, an inanimate object invariably responds with a reaction based on inertia, impeding the action of the force brought to bear on it. This can be demonstrated by striking a brick wall with your bare fist. But a living being reacts otherwise. It uses intelligence in order to avoid a source of aggression, or at least to neutralize its effects. If we saw an inanimate object behaving like a living being, if, for instance, a tennis ball we were trying to serve repeatedly kept jumping out of the way of our racket and refusing to be served, we would have to assume that there was some intelligence attached to the tennis ball. Tennis balls do not behave in this way, though they sometimes seem to, but something similar does happen every time the presence of polarized psi elements causes bits of physical matter to behave intelligently and overcome their natural inertia. Any mechanical stimulus applied to a biomolecule will provoke an immediate reflex in the psi element attached to it, and the latter will register the stimulus and react intelligently. Such a reaction will lead to an alteration of the orbits of the bions around their psi nuclei, which in turn will react by modifying the magnetic moment of rotation that relates them to the movement of the bions. These tiny alterations, added together, lead to rudimentary bionic currents that reveal themselves by almost imperceptible contractile reactions, The foundations of the characteristics of motility and irritability peculiar to protoplasm, originally surrounded by liquids, forming colloids and coccovates, and submitted to stimuli and movements of all kinds, biomolecules gradually stop being pushed round by the laws of chance, thanks to the infinitesimal intelligences that animate them.